John, as we continue talking about time and making it stand still and dealing with it in so many other ways, I can't help but think that really what's going on is this is all just a matter of perception. What would you say to that?
I think you've hit the nail on the head, because really, how do I know this world exists? It's through my perception and a feeling. It really is a matter of perception. I think it was Tennyson who said, two men look through bars. One saw mud, the other saw stars. Two men in the same place looking through the same thing. One's interpretation or perception is, out there is mud. The other one, by raising his eyes a little bit, saw stars. It's the same thing with this. It's where are we looking from and what are we looking at, okay? You look at a monster long enough and you will tend to become like a monster. You look at an angel long enough and you will tend to become like an angel, because maybe in the great scheme of things, we are just all playing games in the universe. I do not think the universe is that cruel that it will make us suffer horribly. Although when we are perceiving that we are suffering, we're experiencing grief or pain or sadness, those things are real, actually real, but they're only real because we're perceiving this. Take, for example, the hypnotist, and this is right in your field, Steve, because you're a fantastic hypnotherapist, but also you're totally aware of what happens, I'm sure you are, you could take somebody, put them up on stage, and they could swear to you that they cannot be hypnotized, and in a short while, they are under hypnosis. You've
right.
seen or probably done that many times yourself to others. Now, what happens if you take a piece of ice, put it on somebody's, let's say the back of his hand, and you tell him, this is a piece of hot coal I'm putting on your hand. I have read, I think it's true, but I have read that after that person will wince with pain. Now, you and I know that it's a piece of ice, and yet that person feels that he is being burnt by a piece of hot coal. And I'm sure you might have seen things like that, or the one where somebody tells, when I snap my finger, you'll cluck like a chicken. And they start doing that at the snap of a finger. Is it because they're being controlled? No, they agreed to trust the hypnotist. They agreed to believe for that moment that whatever they're told, that's what's happening. Am I correct in that? Because that's your field.
Yes, John, you're absolutely correct in that.
Now, could people just take this a step further and feel that, look, I am my own hypnotist, because since I was born, I was being hypnotized by all the things around me. Mommy and daddy would tell me, look, son, you're a little guy and you got to be careful, because if you aren't, this and this and this are going to happen to you. And so we grew up believing these things. I remember in the country I grew up in, as a little boy of maybe about 7 years old, my dad took me to the big city. I mean, for a little boy, that was like magic. Here are these buses and these cars and everything else running around, and the sounds of the city. And to cross the road, my dad said, son, hold on to my hand so we can cross this road, because if you don't, you could be run over. So I'd believe my dad, I trust him, and I crossed the road holding on to his hand. But I perceived safety in doing that. But when I got to 10 or 14 or 17 or 37, and I still believe that I should hold my dad's hand to cross the road, you see what I'm saying is the perception and the belief change. They change. And as we change our perception, our entire world changes. So it has a lot to do with what we believe and how we trust it and how the process evolves. It is really a matter of perception.
I like that. And that offers hope, I believe, to people when they realize that their perception changes everything. And yes, I agree with everything you said about hypnosis and hypnotherapy, and it's an agreement that the person makes. And we can, as you mentioned, we can make agreements with ourselves to change our perception. We can actually decide in this moment that we're going to perceive our lives differently from now on, that we're going to live into a new version of ourselves, which, as you mentioned, is probably existing somewhere anyway. We're just tapping into it. And I really like that concept, John.
Well, I'm glad, because I think creativity isn't really like making something out of nothing. It's just like reaching out into the universe and pulling the pieces together and putting them in a certain orderly way. I think that's what it is. And since those pieces places probably exists already. I don't have to really look for them. All I have to do is create a climate in my mind where those pieces can come to me. Because I believe it's a lot easier to bring your experiences to you instead of rushing after things and saying, let me do this, let me do that, let me do the other thing. All I'm doing is creating a lot of confusion and more heat than light. But if I sit back quietly and I listen to the internal stirrings of my soul and my heart, and I trust that, okay, what I learned there isn't quite the way it should have been. I'm old enough to interpret it a little differently. And then I start listening to me. I will get data. It will come to me. I believe things are attracted to us according to our thoughts, according to our beliefs. And this means when I say things, I'm using the word very, very loosely because I'm talking about experiences, which really those aren't things. Those are events. And I'm talking about physical things like, let's say, take a single person who really thinks it's time that he should or she should find someone to share, that they can share their lives together. And I have had this happen in my advising people. As you know, I consult with people all over the world and say, when am I going to meet my soulmate? And the first thing I think of, well, I really don't know what they're talking about, because although I know the theory of soulmates and all that, I'm thinking this person is looking so hard. And the more this person looks, the farther away this thing moves from him, because they are so scared. They're saying, on one hand, they're saying to themselves, I am going to find my soulmate even if it kills me. Like someone, imagine at a tender moment, two lovers, one saying to you, to the other one, one is angry, say, I'm going to love you even if it kills me. I mean, you might be saying that, but the mind and heart and soul aren't there. So you've got to be one with yourself. And when you do that, you don't have to rush after the thing you're seeking for. The same with money. I'm going to be rich in this lifetime. I'm going to make millions and millions of dollars. The more you think about it and the more you force it and try to make it happen instead of creating the condition in which it can occur, the more difficult it'll be for you to get it. But if you relax and say, yeah, have self-talk, talk to yourself, you know, having a lot of money shouldn't be a struggle. Look at some of the friends I have. They all have a lot, so why do I struggle unless I am a glutton for punishment and I want to set up this test for me? And tests don't care. They just come up and say, hey, buddy, this is a test. And you might say, I don't want any test. And the test says to you, well, I really don't care. I'm a test. I'm your test. Do with me whatever you want. And what it is a learning and teaching experience. It's trying to tell you, sit down, son. Sit down. Relax. There's a lot more to know. And if you create the climate for this data to come in, you will have an urge to do something. I'm not saying you might have an urge to go buy a lottery ticket and that brings you $50 million. That could possibly happen. I know people who have won lotteries that way. I don't think, for me, that's something I want to bother about. I think there are a lot of other more creative ways, more fun ways to do things. And so you create the climate where the things come to you instead of you're rushing after them. Now, I want to tell you, you got any comments there, Steve, so far? Or let me continue.
Well, a lot of thoughts come to mind, if you don't mind. One thing that comes to mind is the story of a good friend of ours, yours and mine, Frank Mangano. He was the co-author with myself of the book You Can Attract It, which has a lot to do with what we're talking about here. Mm. But Frank's story is interesting because he had a job which wasn't allowing him to get where he wanted to be. He wanted to be someone who had some money and some time and some opportunities and so forth, but he didn't have that. But the thing is, what happened to him is he realized he needed to create that environment, as you've been talking about, create that environment where it could happen. And so his parents were diagnosed with certain health ailments, and he started looking into that. By virtue of his research, he became a consumer health advocate, not only helping his parents, but helping thousands of others, and was able to then create that environment. So sometimes it's interesting when we follow our heart, when we do good things, when we follow our positive, powerful intentions, we actually take ourselves right out of that existence that we are in, that limited existence, and put ourselves into what you're talking about, which is a situation in which we have, in fact, created an opportunity where we can thrive.
Absolutely. And perhaps there are others who would explain it this way. By taking ourselves out of that situation, our world just split. We just came to the fork in the road, and we took the road less traveled. And when we did that, there were lots of joys. We're like Frank. He got into something that's a little different or a lot different than what he was doing. That's what happened to me, too, and I'm sure to a lot of people listening to this. I started out as a scientist. I was supposed to do all these, you know, discover things. I noticed after I got my degrees or whatever, I was bored with that sort of stuff. And I ended up writing books, something I had never thought that I might do. But that's because circumstances, which I think at times are really guideposts, came into my life and sort of directed me, gave me a choice to find what I really wanted to do, which was to share a few of the things I learned from this system or any alternate systems with a few people who are willing to listen. And that's what I've been doing, and that's what makes me happy, and it pays the bills too. And of course, I have no interest in making billions and billions of dollars. Had that been my drive, I'm sure I could have done that too. But that doesn't turn me on as much as somebody somewhere in the world who will be listening to what I'm saying right now and what you're saying, Steve. Use these things to make their lives really, really better. I think that's what we will be doing for a long time, or that's what our job was or is. And again, old Richard Bach of Jonathan Livingston Seagull once said, you know, I think the question that will be asked of us when we leave this dimension, wherever we are going, into the greatest adventure ever after we leave this lifetime, the question wouldn't be, well, how many castles did you have? How many CDs in the bank? How many big mansions and cars and so forth? He said the question he thinks that will be asked of us, probably by ourselves, is, how deeply did you love? How much did you care? Because I think this is a growth pattern for all of us to develop within us the godly qualities of love, compassion, and stuff of that nature. All the others are just peripheral things. And you might say, well, John, how can you take compassion to the grocery store and say, look, I'm full of compassion. Can I have a loaf of bread? Well, that's not how it works. But if you're full of compassion, you don't have to worry about the bread. Somehow or the other, circumstances and situations will present themselves that will make that loaf of bread and 10 times that become available to you. Remember, you don't have to chase after things. The very nature of things when you chase after them is to run away from you. I want to tell you those of you who have read my book called When You Can Walk on Water, Take the Boat, which, by the way, Steve, if they wanted, they can download it for free on the internet. I have given it to the world. It's my best-selling book. It's in languages like Spanish, French, Portuguese, Romanian, I don't even remember what languages it's in. But they can go to waterbook.com, get it for free. In that book, which in itself is magical, it talks a little bit about time there. It has the story of my dog. I once had a dog when I lived up north by the name of Raja. It was a beautiful, full, purebred collie. And when I'd come back from my trips, I'd run around the yard with Raja. And one day I was away for, I was traveling, I don't know, Europe or Africa or somewhere in business. And I came home and Raja would always be waiting. He knew when I'd come. And I took him out of this big fenced-in area I made for him. And he was so happy to see me, and he ran up to me, and then he turned around. Now remember, this was a trained dog. I had hired a trainer to make sure that Raja obeyed every command. And all of a sudden, it must be that he wanted to play. He'd start running away from me and stopping. And guess what I did? I started running after him to catch him. I'm sure you know what happened. As I ran towards him, Raja started running away from me. And I started getting a little upset. I had just traveled across time zones and everything, and I was tired. And here's this dog. I'm calling him. Well-trained dog. He wouldn't listen. I'm trying to catch him so he didn't run onto the highway or get away somewhere. And every time I move towards him, he will move farther away from me. And all of a sudden, this very theme I'm talking about tonight occurred. I remember, I said, no. If I run after him, he will keep running away from me. So I stopped. Every time I stopped, Raja stopped. And I turned around, and I started to walk away from him. I started running away from him. You can guess what happened. He ran right up to me. I patted him on his head, and all was well. I think events are like that. Things are like that. We run after them. We run after a relationship, and it will run away from us. It's like we're giving signals to push it away. We stop, and we just develop that, like, divine don't give a damn attitude. And the relationship comes, the money comes, the happiness comes. See what I mean?
Absolutely. That's very well put. There's a great movie, not to plug my own name, but it's called The Tao of Steve. And Tao, of course, is spelled T-A-O, The Tao of Steve. And I have no relation to this movie whatsoever. I'm not in it or anything. Just happens to use a name that I happen to have. But in the movie, the guy teaches a technology to his other guy friend, which is about how to attract women. And he essentially says that what you have to do is contrary to what you think you have to do, which essentially is moving the other way, which is exactly what you're talking about. And I think whether we're talking about dating or money or sometimes even jobs or anything that we try too much for, what we tend to do is, first of all, show the thing that we're after, just how anxious we are to get it. And second of all, we repel it. And all we really have to do is be calm, realize the universe is abundant. It's going to give us all good things in time, and actually do what's contrary to what we've been doing. Instead of running after it, maybe even move in the other direction.
I think it's really just reprogramming ourselves, changing our beliefs, saying if it's a relationship, you know, that would be a wonderful, lovely relationship. But then notice what we do in cases like that. Then we throw in the caveats and the what if. Well, you know, what is there so special about me that anybody would want? See, what we're doing, we're short-circuiting ourselves. We are judging ourselves instead of saying, it doesn't matter. This is a beautiful person. This guy is really a wonderful guy. And if you're a girl, I want to be, or even a guy, I want to be with that person. If it's the opposite, you might look at the girl and say, you know, she is so lovely. I think I feel good. I would like to go out on a date with her, but not to put any terrible pressures on yourself, saying that, oh my gosh, if I don't do this, I will surely die. And I'll feel bad forevermore, because as you say it, you're making it so. You don't want to do that. You want to approach it like, this is part of me. This is what I'd like. It is totally normal for me to get this. And guess what would happen? You might not get that exact thing. But if you have that kind of thought and thinking about it, you will get that or something that's a lot better than that. Ever heard looking for something? I mentioned serendipity a while back. You go looking for something that you think you really want, and you end up getting something that's a lot better than you thought you wanted. It's magic. It's a magical universe. And someone once said, you know, God is a comedian playing to an audience that's afraid to laugh. I mean, come on, this whole thing is a big gift. And the word that we're getting is, hey, kids, meaning all of us, unwrap your gifts. And then, yeah, I know, I have a gift here. I have a gift of writing, but I don't know how to unwrap it. Well, you know, discover how to unwrap it. Yeah, this is a magical universe. It's like it's saying to us, come on, children, come on. You are me, and I am you, and this is supposed to be a fun ride. Yes, there is space, there is time, there are good things, quote-unquote again, and not so great things, but they're all yours, and it's all in you, and you can choose what you want. So let's get back. Just turn this around and get back to the choosing process and to the part of how to make time stand still. And I mentioned earlier, you're not going to make time stand still. You're going to stand still. And as you stand still, time obeys you and time slows down. And if you start moving it faster in your mind, it will move faster. It's like a magical thing. As you think, it becomes so. And time again, we think of ourselves as slaves and servants to time. No, time exists because we can perceive it.
Very good. So you're saying that time wouldn't exist if it weren't for our perception. Is that right?
Well, yeah. You remember the old thing, if a tree falls in the forest and I'm not there to witness it or to hear it, did it make any noise? Well, actually, that's a nice little paradox because it could fall. All the trees in the forest could fall. But if I'm not there, if I do not observe it, if there's not an observer, the event did not happen. If it doesn't affect me directly, it doesn't happen. So time, it moves according to how we perceive it. To the yogis, the ancient rishis, they didn't have anything to do with time as much. I have never met a yogi, and I've met a number of them, who wears a watch. Now you might say, "Do you wear a watch, John?" "Yeah, I wear a watch. Why?" "Because I like it." Okay, maybe there is a yogi who likes a watch, but for the purpose of telling time, I have never met a yogi who has a watch and wonder, I have a meeting at this time. Because somehow they seem to know that the world is unhurried if we in our minds are unhurried. But if we are rushing, the whole world seems to rush with us. And it hardly ever gets into the consciousness of ourselves. It's like that time and the things and events are associated with our thoughts. It'd be just as ridiculous to look at our shadow and say, that's a strange thing. It seems to follow me all over the place. I can't get rid of it. When I get up in the morning and I'm walking or something, it's a beautiful sunshine day, I see this dark thing behind me, and they told me it's a shadow. And yet, I don't know its purpose, and I want to go right, and it goes right with me. And if I go left, it goes left. It never goes its own way. That's because it's tied to me. The shadow is created by my presence, by my body. And so it is with time. It will work for you if you think about it like that. If you don't think of it as something that is so fixed and I have to accomplish all these things in this time, then it will work for you. But again, don't just jump out and throw away your watch or change what you're doing or thinking all of a sudden. No need to do it all very quickly. Slowly, slowly, you change a little bit here and you change a little bit there, and you are reprogramming, although I don't like the word reprogramming. You are recreating yourself to deal with other situations in a universe that's abundant, that's full of all good things.
I think that's wonderful, John. And the concept that I really like is the idea that we can master time, that rather than time mastering us, we can master time. And we are no longer, once we acknowledge that we're no longer under its control, we are apparently suddenly no longer under its control. And we can then take more direct charge of our lives. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think we can then be free. Freedom is the watchword. And when I'm talking about freedom, I'm not talking about political freedom or freedom of speech or any of those things. I'm talking about the most important freedom, which is the freedom to be brilliantly and gloriously who we are. And when we get to that point of accepting who we are, knowing that we are not slaves to time, but time actually flows from our perception. We are not slaves to things, but things are created by what we think and what we expect and how much we believe in ourselves and in the universe, in any of the situations we have. Then we are going to realize a kind of a freedom uncommon in ordinary moments. Then we will feel a kind of a joy that comes over us. And then there will be the joy of living, not existing anymore. Not from paycheck to paycheck, not from disease to disease, or not from health to disease and back again, not from poverty to abundance, but constant abundance. And one might choose a little or a lot, and it won't matter. It really won't matter. And it's just a matter of how we look at this thing. And I think it was Brother Angelo, one of the medieval mystics, who said, "That thou seest man become to thou must. God, if thou seest God, dust, if thou seest dust." Which is saying to me, it's what you see. It's what you see in your mind. There was a wonderful, wonderful teacher who lived in New York a few years ago. Actually, my old friend Vitali read his books. He was called Eric Butterworth. Very forward-looking, wonderful person, and I was privileged to know him. He was a friend of mine, and we were keynote speakers at the ARE, which is the Association for Research and Enlightenment in Virginia, Virginia Beach. And one of the things that he said that I always remember and quote, he says, don't fix it, just see it right. Don't try to make it right. Just see it right, and it will make itself right. Now, at certain stages, some people listening to this will think that's a lot of nonsense. But sometimes, you know, crazy nonsense makes more sense than established sense. And this is one of those cases. How can I see it right? Well, if you hold the picture of it in your mind, in your imagination, and there's enough emotion behind you, and you realize something, you can try to get all these things and it won't happen unless you believe that you deserve these things. Remember what I said earlier? The universe is saying, come on, my child, all these gifts are yours. First, you got to believe that they are. Open your gifts. Trust me. You asked for these things. I'm giving them to you. But if you don't open your gift, how can I make you see that? How can I see for you? So trust it. Believe it. Know that you deserve it because you're my child. I wouldn't have thrown you into such a messy, seemingly messy world if you didn't have the ability to cope with it. You've got it, but you just don't remember. You know, Deepak once said, so much trouble trying to learn when all we have to do is remember. So if we sit quietly, close our eyes, and start remembering who we are, we will discover some wonderful, wonderful things within ourselves. And we will be able to dehypnotize ourselves and not believe anymore what we're hearing all around us, that this is a terrible place, and look at the killings and shootings and the horrible climate. And we will find that it's not really as bad. And it all is coming from us and what we believe.
Well, John, you have a way of putting things so succinctly and so powerfully and really getting your point across. And I want to thank you for enlightening us, for sharing your gifts with us, because you clearly have seen quite a bit. And it's through your words that we can then begin to see that in our lives and start unraveling the mysteries of life itself. So thank you very much. And on behalf of myself, Steve G. Jones, and my good friend here, John Harry Sharan, we want to wish you an outstanding life.